Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to another episode of the Empire of the Suns podcast. The Suns lost by not as many points as they should have last night, but they were down a whole lot of points really fast, and it was very, not upsetting, but startling, I think is the right way to say it.
It was startling because it was more like you could see that they were going to get blown out when they were down four, when they were down six, when they were down eight. Like, you could see it happening. You knew it was going to come, and it wasn't going to get stopped. And that was, to me, the most concerning part, where it's, you see that snowball happening, and there's no way to stop it, and you see it immediately out of the gates. That's what the most startling part of it is.
So in case you are not following, the Suns played the Sacramento Kings on Tuesday night. Today is Wednesday, right? I never know what day of the week it is.
It is Wednesday,
man.
Yes.
Very good. The Suns put up an embarrassing first quarter. It was one of the worst stretches of basketball I have ever seen live in an NBA game. They were outscored 36-9, but I honestly believe that 36-9 does not speak to how poorly they played. The layup line slash open shots that the Kings were able to manufacture offensively. I don't know how many straight possessions they scored, but it just started snowballing in a hurry, and it was clear that the three rookies on the floor, Mikal Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, and Elia Kobo, had never been in a situation like that before, and they didn't really know what to do. No one was really running the offense at a couple of points. Trevor Ariza shot 0 of 5 in the first quarter, and he took at least two drives to the rim where he was like, is no one going to do anything? Okay, I'll just drive to the rim. And that's not his game, obviously, and he missed those shots. But no one out there was taking control. It was just a situation far too big for Elia Kobo as the point guard to kind of rein in the team. That was just, it was too big for them to handle in the moment. And Ayton said as much after the game. He admitted that, I've never been in a situation like that before in a game. And the team did not have Devin Booker and TJ Warren, which is worth mentioning, but at the same time, I don't think it really matters at all because of the way that they play. There is no NBA team, even if their roster is mostly compromised of G League players or below, there is no NBA team that should play like that. I wrote in my recap that, okay, maybe they're down 15 points at halftime, or maybe the game really gets away from them in the third quarter and the fourth quarter is a wash or whatever. It should never be 36-9 after the first quarter. You should never be down by 33 points with 8 minutes left in the second quarter. And what we haven't really mentioned yet is this is the Sacramento Kings. They're 12-11. They're playing really well, but at the same time, the talent level overall of this team, the second unit came in and was playing as a full second unit. That second unit, I believe, was Frank Mason, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Justin Jackson, Kosta Kufis, and I'm forgetting who the four was. It was Justin Jackson. Troy Williams was the three. Yeah. And they just kept rolling. And that is a bench lineup where there's Bogdan is a good player, but everyone else is just completely in the what is the upside down from Stranger Things. Like, they're just stuck in the upside down, the NBA's version of that when it comes to their status in the league right now. They either don't know what they are, or their kind of career is coming to an end, like Kufis, for example. Or it's like Troy Williams, where they're just trying to hang on to an NBA roster right now. And they just kept rolling. And at that point, I was like, okay, this is one of the worst things I've ever seen in terms of quality of play in a basketball game. And this speaks to a greater extent what is wrong with this team, what is wrong with this franchise, and the stink on this team in the past couple of years. It's hard to forget, but we truly did forget. There were a lot of losses last year where the Suns lost by 30, 40, 50 points.
I didn't forget.
None of them felt like this. None of them felt as, not hopeless, but just a lack of anything. There was nothing there in the first quarter.
I feel like time has just hidden those feelings. Like, I think when Earl Watson was coach, there were some of those losses. There were a few with Triano. Okay, so before we hit, let's go ground up real quick. The players obviously didn't play well. We can get back to that in a sec. How much do you put on Igor? Because you see people on Twitter calling for his job. And look, I'll go out there and say I think that it does worry me because just his personality, he's very quiet, that maybe he's not getting their attention like with urgency because he doesn't feel the need and he doesn't think that's his job, whatever. You see him being intense in the huddle. He talks X's and O's, but I don't know. I'm not a professional athlete. I don't know how much he needs to go and rah-rah the guys before a game against Sacramento Kings. So just, I'm going to ask, how much do you think is on him? He took kind of the blame, didn't have his team ready. I think there's some part that he needs to look at himself in that, but I don't think it's easy to judge his job when his players aren't executing or even trying to.
That was a really loud noise my chair made. Good God.
It was the chair.
I assume the mics picked that up, so that's what I'm talking about. I think it's partially on him. It has to be as the coach in that situation. But at the same time, I'm on the side of you're at home, you're against the Sacramento Kings, and I think it goes the other way with the Booker Warren thing. Your intensity should be at an all-time high because we need the best play out of... I wrote the pregame story from Shooteron on Eli Okobo and how important he is with Booker out because they need him, and he was just invisible in that game, nowhere to be seen.
180-degree turn from where he was in that, the Clippers game, where he came out looking for his own shot, made the right passes. Instead, he's... I think I saw this quote sometime last night where Melton was not working horizontally. He was working vertically, right? He was attacking the basket, and whether that was the pass, the dump offs, the shots, like he was creating stuff. Okobo was just like maybe trying too hard to run offense, which was the Suns' entire problem earlier on in the season.
So I think it's on the players more than anyone. I think it has to be, but at the same time, the coach holds some responsibility. I am as people who have read my stuff and listened to me on podcasts know, I am not big on inside locker room, inside baseball type of talk with mentally where are players at, what does this guy have to do to motivate this guy and leadership and so on. I'm not going to act like I understand that stuff. I don't. So I will just say that Kokoschkov deserves some of the blame. But I can't act like this is entirely his fault. And I can't even say that or say it's mostly his fault without knowing the dynamics in the locker room and the dynamics in the organization, which we're obviously just never going to know. So I'm not giving a very good answer. But that's because I don't think you can really give one. But to your point, we keep going up.
Yeah.
And now we arrive at the front office where this is the team you assembled. This is what happens when you don't have a point guard and your one point guard with experience is cut because he's not good at basketball at an NBA level. And then you have two rookie point guards. And I'm not trying to turn around on people, but everyone's saying the rookie should play. The rookie should play. Do you see now why Igor Kokoschkov wanted? I'm not saying if Isaiah Cannon would have played that this would have been fine, but that stabilizing force of a veteran point guard at least gives you something. And that's what happens when you put Eli Okobo in the starting lineup. I'm not saying that's going to happen every game, but when things start to crumble, he's not at a point right now in his career he's going to stabilize things as the point guard and the de facto leader out there on the floor.
So my thing, to turn it back yesterday, Amin El-Hassan went on Bickley and Murata. He talked a lot of things, Ariza trade possibilities, mentioned the Laker, KCP, basically, and then, you can get a second rounder. That's maybe. There are very few options there. He also talked about the questionable, what's happening in the front office. We're 2 months plus past when the Suns fired GM Ryan McDonough. They also fired their assistant GM Pat Connolly, their director of international scouting, who else did they fire? Another scouting guy.
The tidbit that you had was that there were
probably look this up.
There were essentially five scouts that they had, I believe, in the staff directory, plus assistant GM Pat Connolly, plus Ryan McDonough, who has an extensive background in scouting. And now they are down to two guys in the scouting department, and their GMs, their interim GMs. Buckstein is a guy who, from what we've heard from James Jones and others, is more of a CBA guy.
Yeah, he's a law school guy, smart, and knows the... Yeah.
Jones is a former player who just got into front office gigs last year.
Right.
So in terms of scouting people automatically think like they're not watching that kid over in France or they're not watching Darius Garland tape. It's the NBA too. Like scouting the NBA, scouting the opponents and scouting for potential trade targets as well. So it goes beyond the draft.
So they lost their director of scouting and director of international scouting. They lost their NAZ Suns GM. They haven't replaced these people to our knowledge. I don't know if they have scouts that are like contracted that are considered not full-time. So maybe they're not on the staff list, right? But these are like positions of importance. So after James Jones, as far as straight up, I'm watching tape and evaluating basketball talent, you have Bubba Barrage, who's, I think, director of player personnel. You have video guys who aren't, you know, traveling. Maybe they pull some game of Marquette or North Carolina or Duke. Maybe they have opinions. I don't know.
These positions have been filled by people, but they already have other jobs in the organization that they're supposed to be doing. I don't know what the vice president of basketball operations does, to be honest, and what that difference is compared to a co-interim general manager. But
title, yeah.
You're doing two things at once now.
James Jones can have the best basketball IQ in the world, but he's not going to learn as much about Zion Williamson if he's only able to attend one game at Duke because he has to be watching the Suns, watching other teams in the NBA for trade options. Like, you just need bodies to do the work, to put in the hours watching film or traveling or whatever. And for a team that's obviously, possibly, because of the odds, going to get the number one pick, that's really concerning, especially after you've missed on all of these other lottery picks, it seems. So right now, that's looking way long term because I'm trying to take my eyes off this terrible basketball and I'm trying to not think about it anymore because I know that more nights like that will be ahead and I don't want to like keep ragging on these Suns players who, look, it's hard. Like, they're put in a terrible position. Igor is put in a bad position. I don't think the players don't care, but there's just this culture that hasn't changed and we're waiting for it to change and I don't have answers and no one does. So that all goes back to the top. Like, if Robert Sarver hasn't taken the interim tag off James Jones, like, if you think that's the play here, if that's what you've been trying to do, just do it. Hire a new staff. Maybe he's having an open audition this entire year, and I know it's hard to hire people, but you're going in, Amin said it, bare bones into a huge draft where you can kind of maybe try to fix your mistakes that Ryan McDonough made to get this roster where it is. So it's just like continual flipping of opinions about what to do, the direction of the franchise, not committing to a guy who you just handed the job after he kind of was on like training wheels for an entire year. Like, I don't care how smart he is. Again, it's this job is tough. Like, the film, like scouting. Do you think James Jones scouted college kids as a player the last 14 years? I doubt it. I doubt he knows the intricacies of looking at young players when they're so raw and like how you pick out what makes them great after they blossom or whatever. That stuff is concerning. And he doesn't even have anyone behind him that's going to help him doing that. That's what's concerning. It's not even just bodies. It's like, who's going to teach you? Have you been around people? Do you trust these people you work with?
McDonough was viewed as a relatively inexperienced young general manager coming into his first job, and he spent 10 years working for the Celtics before that. So it's obviously troubling if the current state, and then it's also troubling if Jones gets the job, honestly, because he just doesn't have experience. I don't care who it is. It could be could be Michael Jordan or LeBron James or whoever, like the greatest basketball player of all time, who's the smartest basketball player of all time and an excellent basketball mind. You've been doing a front office thing for 18 months. Like, I don't know how else to interpret it. To put a bow on the Kings game as a whole, I want to go back to two things that I wrote after games that were kind of columny. One of them was the Suns are playing really well with Point Book, but there's only so far they can go. They have a cap ceiling. That's something we talked about in another podcast. And then after the Magic game, I wrote that at 4-18, how much longer can you expect great effort like this? How much more, especially without Warren and Booker? The Magic game was, I believe, the first game without Booker and Warren, and then they played the Lakers game where they got off to a great start, but then things fell off quickly, and then that just led to the Kings game. So that's where I get concerned, is they had this great thing going with the effort this team was playing with, but at a certain point you're going to lose too many games in a row. They've lost 9 of 10 now, and that effort's just going to go away. It just is. That's the way this works, and it looks like it has, but I think it's obviously a big back-to-back here because Booker and Warren are not playing against Portland on Thursday, and Igor said at practice today they most likely will not play on Friday. So how do they respond? How do certain players respond? Can they find some stable ground here? Because if they don't, the concern is this is just going to keep going, because I have absolutely zero faith at all in the front office to make a move in season to fix this, because that's clearly what needs to happen.
It's hard right now.
And it's really hard to do that right now. You have been very well in pulling me back in when I've been saying, you need to go get a point guard, you need to get this. And
no
it's
one
just
else wants to trade right now.
It's just really hard to do that right now. But with that being said, okay, then just overpay, because you've got no other choice right now, or this thing is going to keep submarining. You are going to win 16 games, and you are going to be at a point in this offseason where your superstar might seriously consider asking for a trade.
It's a vicious cycle, yeah.
How else does Devin Booker look at this? Because all it has been is a rotating room. The GM, it just keeps changing. The head coach, it just keeps changing. The players, they keep changing around him, but all he sees is the same old stink on this thing. So when does he consider moving on? And people are going to say, they just paid him a lot of money. They have him locked up. They don't have to trade him. There are certain elements to this that are beyond their control.
John Wall will be interesting.
John Wall is certainly a guy to watch. And that's something where you look at the offseason and you say Booker asked for a trade or whatever. What if it's something like that, where they just make a huge move to help patch this up now that really hurts them in the long term, trading for John Wall or just giving someone a ridiculous amount of money in free agency and saying, you don't want to come here? Well, here's the Trevor Ariza type contract, but for 4 years.
I meant it more like, if John Wall can get traded, you can trade Book. Like,
oh, yeah.
Because that's a lot more money for an older player. Now, if it doesn't happen, like, then yeah, that's different.
That's the new trend in the NBA the past 5 to 10 years, is guys are, this was not a thing. Guys just asking out and going to all these different places and getting traded all the time. Stars getting moved like this all the time. It's just the way the league is now.
The Supermax, though, makes it very interesting because we haven't ever seen it, right? Like, these are the first guys on Supermax deals. We don't know how tradable they are. Like, you would have to deal in, I mean, just the salaries involved in making that deal would be ridiculous. That other team would be tearing things down. So yeah, we have to see what happens.
Let's look at a couple things in terms of the players on the team in these next couple of games. I think we have to start with DeAndre Ayton. We talked about 3 or 4 weeks ago how his weaknesses in the lead up to the draft and everything, they have certainly showed. But I think the biggest surprise for me with his play so far has been, we did not see a lack of effort or energy out of him at Arizona that much. Sure, he had his he just stands there moments on defense and complacency on offense at times. But I think what we're seeing right now is Arizona was a great situation. He was the guy. They were a very winning basketball team. And he seemed to bring it most nights. Now he's on a 4-20 team, and we're seeing that he is just going to check out at some points on this team. That's just what he's going to do. People are upset about it, as they should be, because he's the number one pick. And what you tweeted after the game was, this is what happens when you have young guys that aren't alphas right now. And that's not to say that Ayton is never going to be an alpha, but he certainly isn't right now, because there was an alpha in this draft, and maybe there are a couple more, but there are certain players that would not have played like that, even rookies, and he sort of got stuck in the moment. He admitted after the game, like I said, that he's never been in a situation like that before, where his team has been down that many points, and he had, this is the NBA, teams don't come back from that, so he had essentially seen the 35-point deficit and said, okay, like, this is over. Which is a thing that a lot of players believe, but at the same time, to say it and say it to the media, something. And it's a rough spot for him right now to figure out, because the team is, I wrote in the recap, the team is relying on him right now because he's the most talented player they have right now. I'm not even willing to say he's the best player they have right now, because he's certainly not playing like it.
To me, and I tweeted this in the first quarter when it started going south, is like, all right, this game's over, basically. I wanted to see how he responds, because, look, it's not every time, but, and it's not, definitely not every game, even when they've been losing a lot, but there are times when he individually is getting picked on defense. Buffalo game at Arizona. When they're playing a bad team, Oregon State game at Arizona, Sacramento Kings last night, he does not come out. He just kind of floats around, and I don't know if it's just like overthinking. I don't think it's like just like, I'm done, we're getting blown out, I don't like this. I don't think he's pouting either, but he definitely plays differently depending on how the game's going. If he comes out and he gets a couple lobs, like, he's going to be fine usually. If they're competing, he's going to be fine. Late in games at Arizona, he was actually really good. Like, you don't think of big men like impacting the game, like, especially on the offensive end, and he did that at Arizona. The Suns haven't been in those situations, but when he's engaged, it's always when things are going well. And so the challenge for him is, like, I tweeted out this video of him just floating around and guarding a no one as someone drives past him and gets a layup. Like, you can't do that. That looks awful. That's why this is kind of a panic moment when you look on Twitter. But again, it's a guy who's has all the talent in the world, and it's just like, how do you get him to play like an angry person almost and do it consistently, or at least know when to pick his spots better, instead of just letting guys, when they do something weird, like when he was just being left to shoot mid-range jumpers, like, he panicked, and that's not a reason to panic even, but that kind of ruined the rest of his game too.
I think what the main concern here is, from my perspective on him, has been his three main weaknesses are offensive creation, physicality, and his defensive instincts and instincts overall. I think we can take physicality and kind of group that into like physicality / engagement in the game. And now my concern is, my argument with him was, if two of these three weaknesses are not an issue at the NBA once he develops and everything, he's going to be a very, very, very good NBA player. If he has great offensive creation and he's physical, he's just a monster offensive player regardless. If physicality is there and his defense is there, then okay, maybe an offensive option, and he's not a guy to be your first or maybe second option on a really good team offensively, but he's extremely productive, plays solid defense, and is physical all over the place. But if you take off one of those, and now you've only got one of those three things, that's where I'm concerned if he is going to be a very good player. And we're holding these standards again, because I have to keep reminding everyone, this guy was the number one overall pick in a loaded draft class,
right?
And we have to
that
hold
matters.
Those super high standards, and that very much matters. My concern now is that we have to add the engagement to that physicality. There's a chance of him just not being an issue throughout his entire career. Again, 25 games in, yada, yada. Conversations we have to have at some point with how he has played continuously over this season. This has been a problem in the Brooklyn game, for example, against the Nets, when they played him differently. And when things change up on him or things aren't necessarily going his way, he kind of gets lost in a daze. And it's concerning, because of the standards that we are supposed to hold him to, and I think we should hold him to. So now I'm grouping that together with the physicality, and if he's physical and he's engaged and he's either a creative offensive player or he figures out his defense, he is going to be a great player in this league still, without a doubt. And I think one of the things I'm holding on to for hope right now is that this is something that maybe that mindset and physicality comes out of him when he gets a little bit older, maybe his third, fourth year in the league. His responses to aggression have basically been, that's not the player I am. I'm not the type of player to get my look for my own shot. I'm more selective and things like that with his picking his spots. I think that's just a mentality change that can come from getting more comfortable in the league and being more skilled and being more confident in your skills. And there's a maturation process to go there. And what we have said since, it's been well over a year now on this podcast, what we've said, he's just a raw prospect for how immensely talented and how highly rated of a prospect he is. He's raw in a completely different way we haven't really seen before, because you think of raw, you think of Dragan Bender averaging 16 minutes a game and putting up 3 points and only scoring from the three-point line and taking 6 total free throws in his first season or whatever it was. Aiden's going to give you 15 and 10, but there's just all of these little intrinsic, I don't even know the word I tried to say right there. Oh my God. The very detailed type of parts of his game really, really, really need work. And I think everyone is seeing that right now. And there's a bit of panic going through. I'm not necessarily panicking about him yet, but it's not great to see this out of him. And even more so, it's going to sting a lot more when you see how great Jaren Jackson looks. His offensive game is just completely grown in less than a year, and then of course Luka and what he has been able to achieve in Dallas. That's his team. It's just that's his franchise already, and he's played 25 games for them. It's pretty remarkable. So yeah, that's kind of where I wanted to wrap on Aiden. Do you have anything else?
Yeah, and it's when I tweet a video, I'm picking on him because all the Suns were doing that, and he's the number one pick, and he's their best player on the court at that time. Which is, you know, people get mad at you for picking on him, and I'm like, yeah, I know he's 25 games in. I didn't say he's going to change, but like, you look for, like, if he spends 2 days and just like visits Shaq or visits like Hakeem or one of those guys one summer, and like they just tell him straight up because they have this aura about them and the ability to tell him like, you need to play mad. I need to see you trying to dunk on everyone. He might take that to heart. That might be all it takes, but not there yet. Do you want to wrap on the one positive?
Yeah, I just want to go off that point for 1 second and just kind of say that once the Suns play on TNT, or if Shaq were to just sit down, Shaquille O'Neal was to sit down and watch Ayton for 2 games, like 2 full games, I think he would lose his mind. I think any of the great all-time bigs would lose their mind watching him right now, because they can't believe the ceiling that he has as a prospect and how he is choosing to use his talents at this time, I guess is the best way to put it. And that's going to be the uphill climb for him. I've completely changed my tone on like the preseason, what I thought. I think now it's just developing that instinct, that the killer instinct, if you will. That's going to be the key for him now for maybe the rest of his career, but hopefully from now until his third, fourth year in the league, he has to develop that to be a great player, I think. Let's end on Melton, though. Melton came into the game, did not play in the first quarter, was out there for most of the Suns' good run. He had 21 points and 5 assists, plus 24 in 23 minutes, 9 of 12 from the field. It was great to see. Do I think he should start next game? I don't think it's a terrible idea considering how Elie Okobo played, but I think this just goes along more with what you're going to get out of rookie point guards picked in the second round that aren't really technically point guards. You're going to get some good moments. You're going to get some bad moments. That being said, I think Melton, if he continues to prove that he can be aggressive attacking the basket like he was against Sacramento, I think he is the better overall fit for the team in the starting lineup in the short term and the long term because of his defensive know-how and defensive ability. Because the weakness of this team, when you look at it on paper with TJ Warren and DeAndre Ayton as your front court, is obviously defense, and he helps you there.
He surprised me with more of the ball handling because I thought that he was a little like rigid in that regard. And I know it was the Kings and he was playing against like Frank Mason and stuff, but he looked better in that. And then obviously the shot, it's kind of a weird, like it's weirdly compact, but it went in and it was fairly a quick release and that looked good. Random stat I'll throw out at you right now. In 7 games played per 36, he's at 4.6 deflections in the tracking data, which is 6th. So he's like with Shaquille Harrison.
Mikal is up there, I believe, too, in some of those like deflection leaderboards. He's doing pretty well. Evan Sider, he's been on that stat.
He's at like 3.5, so he's well above Mikal even. So that's a promising sign because we all know this team needs some defense. And if Ellie's not giving you offense and leadership on that end, then you might as well go Melton because he plays like an older player.
When the Frank Ntilikina talks were happening and we were discussing it on Twitter and stuff, the main point Brian Gerberman made it is that you take guys like Mikel and D'Anthony and Frank, those are the ideal players you put around guys like Devin Booker, TJ Warren, and DeAndre Ayton. You have defense first, super long, can switch and guard multiple positions and cover your butt in a whole lot of different ways. And they also make winning plays, don't turn the ball over too much, just play smart basketball. And that's the type of player we hope to see D'Anthony Melton become. And hopefully he's good enough this year for the rest of the year where it's to the point where Frank is actually available in the offseason. And the Suns are like, oh, no, we have D'Anthony, that's fine. Frank's a whole other caliber prospect. He's already going to be he already is a terrific defender right now. And he's already headed for all defense teams already.
He has to play, though, and get on the court.
But he has to play and get on the court and prove that he's a point guard because apparently the Knicks are still trying to make him a point guard when he should just be a combo.
Yeah.
But the Knicks, what are they going to do? Speaking of the Knicks, man, Arizona sports, we always talk, oh, man, Arizona sports, classic, always happens. Dark days. We in the middle of this podcast, Paul Goldschmidt got traded, so we had to run away, but we came back. Cardinals are 3-9. Rosen, what's up with
him?
They
went to Lambeau, dog.
I don't know. Oh, yeah, they won in Lambeau. My bad. just overlooked beating Aaron Rodgers in his own house when he definitely wasn't tanking that game to get his coach fired. The Suns are 4-20. DeAndre's, it's the lowest his stock has been with the Suns. That's your music, Arizona Coyotes. Now is your time, Rick Tockett. Take over the city. It's up for grabs.
They already have the Natty Hattie podcast here.
Yep.
We don't have...
Seriously, if you're listening and you're a hockey fan and you're not listening to that's Craig Morgan, Luke Lipinski, and Jamie Eisner. You guys need to listen to them. I listen to it a fair bit. It's a great little dealio that is you can find on ArizonaSports.com. We'll be back next week, hopefully talking about some competitive basketball, maybe more extended looks at Melton. Maybe Melton and Okobo together. That's something that we saw in the fourth quarter. DeAndre, does he finally have that 30-20 game or whatever that Gambo and Bernsey have been clamoring for the past couple of weeks? Who knows? We'll see. Are we going to talk about the draft yet, Kevin? Where are we at with that? What do you think?
I'm going to put a no on that, dog. It is December, though.
2019.
You can hold out like 30 more days.
Sometime in 2019, we will talk about the NBA draft. I will make that guarantee on this podcast.
New Year's resolution.
In 2019, we will talk about the NBA draft. In 2018, probably not, but in 2019, we will. We'll talk about Zion. We'll talk about RJ Barrett. Until then, though, no, we're not putting our foot down.
I like that. That's some self-control from Kellen Olsen.
I'm doing it. I really want to talk about Zion and how I'm worried about how he can't shoot and maybe sleeps on defense. But no, we're not doing it. All right. I'm ending the podcast here. Goodbye, everyone.